Resistance to revolution. Frontline Fellowship has been a mission to the front lines, to the persecuted churches evangelizing in war-torn areas for 38 years. And we have been resisting revolution from the beginning. When communism controlled one-third of the world's land surface and one-third of the world's population, Rhodesia, Southwest Africa, and South Africa were in the very front line of the hot part of the Cold War, resisting the southward expansion of Soviet-sponsored communist terrorism. Other hot spots in the front line of resistance to communist revolution during the Cold War were South Korea and Chile. Taiwan, or Free China, they still are in the front line. Afghanistan, invaded by the Soviets Christmas Day, 1979. Nicaragua. And, of course, the iconic symbol of the Cold War, the Brandenburg Gate, which was part of the Berlin Wall, dividing the capital city of Germany between the Soviet-occupied German Democratic Republic, or GDR, and the Federal Republic of West Germany, right at the forefront of the advance of Soviet communism into the heart of Europe. However, after the conclusion of the Korean War from 1950 to 1953 and the Vietnam War in 1975, the hottest part of the Cold War was Southern Africa. At first, Portuguese West Africa, Angola, and Portuguese East Africa, Mozambique, bore the brunt of the Soviet-sponsored revolutionary onslaught. But after the revolution in Portugal of 1974, these overseas provinces of Portugal, which dated back 500 years, were abandoned into the hands of Marxist terrorist movements for Lima in Mozambique and the MPLA in Angola without so much as a referendum or an election. The local population had no choice in what was to rule them, just like the poor people of Hong Kong were left without even a referendum to choose what form of government they want. Britain just hand them over to the Communist Party of China and sailed away. And that's what the Portuguese did to Mozambique and Angola. The people of Angola and Mozambique were betrayed into the hands of the Soviet Union's puppets, with Cuban forces acting as their surrogates. Along with Soviet military advisors, vast quantities of Soviet weaponry, billions of dollars a year. And then from 1975, the full brunt of Soviet-sponsored revolution fell on Rhodesia. The Rhodesian security forces had been battling communist terrorism since 1965. But the abandonment of Mozambique by Portugal in 1975 opened up more than half of Rhodesia's frontier, the entire eastern border, to hostile attack. Initially, the terrorists' only base of operations for attacking Rhodesia had come from Zambia, to the north of the Zambezi River. But now the insurgency grew exponentially, and the Rhodesians were hard-pressed to beat back the far more numerous and in many ways far better supplied ZANU-PF and ZAPU communist revolutionaries. They had better tanks, they had bigger tanks, they had more weaponry, they had more personnel than we had in the Rhodesian forces. Rhodesia then began a series of hot pursuit preemptive cross-border strikes, including spectacularly successful raids against communist terrorist bases in Mozambique. And these involved conventional clashes with Frelimo's armed forces and aerial bombardments, blowing up bridges and railway lines essential for the supply of these Marxist guerrillas. Rhodesia also increasingly supported RENAMO, the anti-communist resistance movements in Mozambique. In the end, although the Rhodesians were spectacularly successful in the military war, economic sanctions and increasing political pressure brought to bear by the only friendly neighbor to the south, South Africa, forced the Rhodesians into a negotiated settlement where Henry Kissinger put pressure to bear on B.J. Foster to bully Rhodesia into agreeing to this. And apparently Kissinger's offer was, we'll let you keep Southwest Africa, you must give up Rhodesia. And Rhodesia had only one bridge, one railway line, one road across Pike Bridge into South Africa was the only supply line. The rest of the Rhodesian border was hostile, closed, and sanctioned. In the words of Rhodesian Prime Minister Ian Smith, we were never beaten by our enemies. we were betrayed by our friends. With the abandonment of Portuguese West Africa Angola to the Cuban and MPLA force in 1975, and this is the kind of scene you saw at the airport. People ran to airports with what they had and ended up having to abandon most of their luggage on the runway and just fly off to Portugal in what they were wearing. South Africa launched a preemptive raid into Angola, which was so successful that South African forces actually were within sight of Luanda in the far northwest of the country. They could see the Cubans evacuating, loading their tanks and trucks onto the ships to sail back across the Atlantic to Cuba. However, it was at this pivotal point that defeat was snatched out of the jaws of victory by the United States government, who had actually asked the South Africans to intervene to prevent the Cuban takeover of Angola. This was under Henry Ford, whose Secretary of State was Henry Kissinger. Spineless cowards and communist traitors all. They had instigated and pleaded with South Africa to get involved in Angola to forestall a communist takeover, and then America had the audacity to vote against South Africa in the United Nations Security Council, condemning the intervention which they had actually requested. For good or ill, South Africa complied and withdrew from Angola, justly feeling betrayed by its Western allies. But our troops would have to go back and regain that very same territory that they had just gained with much ease earlier. A lot harder the second time. It was not long after that SWAPO terrorist attacks on Southwest Africa greatly increased. Because whereas in the past they'd been limited to the Zambian border to launch attacks into Caprivi Strip, now the entire northern border of Southwest Africa was open to infiltration by SWAPO communist terrorists. Therefore, South Africa began to launch cross-border raids, preemptive strikes, this under P.W. Botha, who was Minister of Defense at the time. This included the spectacular Kasinga airborne assault, the largest parachute assault in the history of Africa since the Second World War, led by the legendary Colonel Jan Breitenbach. These preemptive strikes pushed the communist threat further north, creating a safe buffer zone to protect the villages, the schools, and the farms of Southwest Africa from landmine planting and terrorist incursions. After the betrayal of Rhodesia in 1980, the war in Angola dramatically increased as the hottest part of the Cold War. At any one time, there were 55,000 Cuban troops in Angola. Ultimately, 650,000 Cuban troops passed through service in Angola. And the Soviet Union poured multiplied billions of dollars of their best weaponry into Angola. Despite the international arms sanctions, South African Arms Corps produced the G5 and G6 155mm howitzers, the best in the world, so good that the Americans were soon buying them from us. The Rattles, the finest armored fighting vehicles and armored personnel carriers in the world at that time, with turbo engines. And the Cheetah upgrade to the Mirage jets, which outfought the Mirages, which were meant to be superior in every dogfight. Even when greatly outnumbered, the SADF consistently won spectacular victories against all communist forces in Angola, including in air-to-air, jet-to-jet dogfights. 1980 marked the high watermark of Soviet communist empire. Resistance to communist tyranny deepened and extended. There always was resistance. Even 10 years after the Second World War was over, there were still units of the Ukrainian army and the Lithuanian forces fighting against the Soviet Red Army as late as 1955, in platoon level in Lithuania and in company level, even with artillery in the Ukraine. There was an uprising against the communists in East Berlin in 1953. But the only weapons they had were stones to throw at the tanks. The uprising in Hungary in 1956 was huge. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed. The resistance to communism in Czechoslovakia in 1968, the so-called Prague Spring, again shocked the world at the depth and the extent of the resistance to communism. The growth of solidarity in Poland in the 1980s staggered the communists. And in Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and East Germany, these are some of the protests. This is in Vinclav Square. This is in Prague 1989. And most spectacularly, the Christmas Revolution of Romania in 1989 was the climax of a tumultuous year, which saw the fall of the Berlin Wall and the collapse of the Iron Curtain. Behind the scenes were Bible smugglers like Bill Bethlen, gospel radio broadcasts, Radio Free Europe, underground churches, the Leipzig prayer movement, and the seven-year Jericho prayer march, which was launched in 1982 to bring down the Iron Curtain. I remember hearing it being launched. I'd just come out of the South African Army, back to the mission that I started with, Hospital Christian Fellowship. Brother Andrew was the speaker at our devotions, and he said, we are going to launch next year, 1982, a seven-year Jericho prayer march to bring down the Iron Curtain, the Berlin Wall, open up Eastern Europe to the gospel, and see the collapse of the Soviet Union. And I sat there somewhat staggered by the faith of Brother Andrew and very cynical and unbelieving because I'd been to the Berlin Wall, I'd seen it. It wasn't going anywhere. I was convinced the Berlin Wall would be up until Jesus came back. I mean, it did not, anyone who lived at that time, it was the reality. The idea that communism would ever fall in Eastern Europe in our lifetimes was, it just didn't even seem possible. And yet here they were calling for a seven-year Jericho prayer march. And he said, we're not starting it, we're joining it. It's been started in Leipzig in East Germany. And the symbol of the Leipzig prayer meeting was the candle. People would come with unlit candles. One candle would be lit and they'd pass from one to the other until all the candles were lit. And when the people went home after the prayer vigil, they'd have all lights off in their home, they'd just have one candle, an open window, symbolizing silently one candle is more powerful than all your darkness. Not all the darkness can put out the smallest light. This is the symbol, one of the symbols of resistance to communism, to atheism. And they prayed for the opening up of Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union to the gospel. And this culminated in 1989 with the toppling of communist dictatorships from one end of Eastern Europe to the other. And it was exhilarating. Let me tell you, the 1980s were exhilarating. I began the 1980s in the South African Defense Force when we were doing the most spectacular cross-border raids against the communists in Angola. And I ended in 1989 marrying Lenora, going on Bible smuggling operations on my honeymoon behind Iron Curtain with Bill Bethlen, meeting some of the greatest names in the persecuted church in Eastern Europe, and seeing the resistance. And before the end of that year, all those communist regimes had toppled, and there was freedom for preaching gospel that was unprecedented, and we had smashed the Cubans in Angola. The 1980s were just incredible for a South African soldier or a Bible smuggler or for a Christian ministering to persecuted churches. We won big time. The growth of resistance movements throughout the Soviet Empire, the Contras in Nicaragua, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, RENAMO in Mozambique, UNITA in Angola, and the decisive conventional battles fought by the South African Defense Force against Soviet-led Cuban and Marxist MPLA forces in Angola, culminating in the Lombo River Battle, all heralded the fall of the Soviet Empire. At the same time, there were the singing revolutions, which began in the Baltic states of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. And this led to the secession and the independence of these countries from the Soviet Union. Communist Yugoslavia collapsed with Croatia, Slovenia, Bosnia, and Macedonia breaking away. I remember being earlier on in the year, 1989, in Croatia, and the people speaking about, we are going to break away from the Yugoslav state, from the communist state. And I was very skeptical. But within 2 years, they had succeeded in doing so. Incredible. And Czechoslovakia, the first time I was in Bratislava, they were talking about, we will break away from Czechoslovakia, former independent Slovakia. It sounded impossible to me back then, but within less than 3 years, they had succeeded. The Velvet Divorce. The Czech Republic and the Slovak Republic went their separate ways. Ukraine's independence was recognized, as was Belarus. In fact, 15 republics broke away from the Soviet Union between 1989 and 1991. Our mission, Frontline Fellowship, along with other missions to the communist world, played our part in exposing the atrocities, the weaknesses, the failures, the evils, the hypocrisies, the crimes of communism, and by publishing eyewitness testimonies and photographic evidence of the sufferings of the persecuted church and the resilience in the face of relentless persecution. Bible smuggling, Christian radio programs, regular visits, encouragement, leadership training, including the underground Bible colleges, such as in Romania, they had the School of the Prophets. Because the Romanian Communist Party allowed the 1,200 Baptist churches in Romania only 4 theological students to be trained every 4 years and graduate at the end of those 4 years. Then they could have another 4. So they were effectively only being allowed 1 theological student per year to graduate, although it would be done in a 4-year cycle, for 1,200 churches. So there had to be an underground Bible college to train pastors, which was illegal. All of this helped play a part in strengthening the internal resistance against communist tyranny. Can anyone translate these words? This is Bulgarian. God is love, one faith, one Lord, one baptism. In Mozambique, we had smuggled in Bibles, helped persecuted churches, provided chaplaincy training and resources for RENAMO resistance fighters. That's Alfonso de Lacrama, the president of RENAMO, the resistance movement. He had been a Frelimo revolutionary communist. He said, after the revolution, I realized that we had swapped Portuguese colonials for Russian colonials, and the Russians were worse. The revolution has been betrayed. He went to the bush, joined RENAMO, and they're fighting to this day. And through books such as In the Killing Fields of Mozambique, we helped make the plight of the persecuted church in Mozambique better known. I testified many radio and TV programs throughout the United States and Europe, Frankfurt, International Society for Human Rights, in London, BBC World Service, against the communist Frelimo dictatorship of Mozambique and on behalf of the persecuted church. My Mozambique report was read into Congressional Record by Senator Jesse Helms, head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in America. They cut American foreign aid to Mozambique because of that report. In Angola, we delivered Bibles and books for UNITA freedom fighters of Jonas Savimbi. We supplied them with gospel recordings materials in their languages. We took in Christian filmmakers like Dr. Ted Baer and others to document UNITA's courageous fight against international communism. In Zambia, we conducted biblical worldview seminars and God and government seminars in a country where I'd first been arrested and imprisoned. We delivered thousands of Christian textbooks, spoke on radio and TV, and helped to work for the overthrow of Kenneth Kaunda's UNIP socialist dictatorship. We saw the rise of a new government which officially declared Zambia a Christian country in 1991. Now, the reason why I'm talking about all this now is we have in this last year seen a resurgence of communist revolution, even on the streets of America. And we're certainly seeing work for the second phase of the revolution in our country. The trouble is there's a generation that's grown up who were born after 1989, most of you, who do not know necessarily about the fight against communism, which was a very real part of the life of those of us born in the 60s, who lived in the 70s and 80s, through the Cold War. And so it's absolutely important for us to understand the revolution and to understand how to resist the revolution, because the revolution is on the march today again. So in mobilizing resistance to revolution, there are 5 clear phases. Number 1, information. Newsletters, books, films, radio, TV programs, websites, lectures, presentations. Information. Like in the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah started with being informed. Secondly, intercession, such as mobilizing the 7-year Jericho prayer march to bring down the Iron Curtain, the Leipzig prayer movement, the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, which we've helped to mobilize for the last 30 years, and other prayer initiatives, including the Power of Prayer Handbook. Thirdly, information. Be informed, be interceding, be involved. Bible smuggling. Ministry behind the Iron Curtain, serving persecuted churches, and literature distribution. Our mission has distributed millions of gospel booklets across the borders and hundreds of thousands of Bibles throughout Africa. in the last 38 years. Fourthly, investment. Be informed, be interceding, be involved, be investing. Leadership training, investing in leaders, in love and action, investing in the persecuted church and in the resistance movements. Fifthly, implementation. Mobilizing international resistance to communism, training and strategically supporting resistance movements within communist countries or Muslim jihadist countries for that matter. Some of the books which our mission has produced to mobilize resistance to revolution include In the Killing Fields of Mozambique, which was even translated into Norwegian and delivered to the Norwegian Parliament and made an impact all over the world. Angola by the Back Door, which gives the story about one of the worst months in Frontline's history, December 1994, when we sent four vehicles into the field and only one came back. When one of our missionaries, Anthony Duncan, died in the service of Christ. When one of our teams to Angola, using this Land Rover, succeeded in delivering a ton of Bibles and medicines to UNITA Freedom Fighters in breach of the UN blockade, and on the way back got ambushed, arrested, vehicle destroyed, our people imprisoned. I was the only vehicle that came back. I was in Zambia, and I got the call, managed to mobilize my friends from prison, who now was the vice president, General Godfrey Muyanda, of Zambia, who was actually chairing peace talks between UNITA and the MPLA and Namibian government, on, and he is able to tell him this negotiation goes no further until you release these missionaries. And the missionaries were released, and we could pick them up on the way home. Bill Bethan put that incredible story all together. Holocaust in Rwanda, another book. Going through, even though the doors closed, is Bill Bethan's incredible record of his decades of ministry working behind the Iron Curtain from the 50s all the way through till the fall of the Berlin Wall, 1989. Faith and Defiance Sudan, Slavery, Terrorism, Islam, Historical Roots and Contemporary Threat, and a series of documentary films. In the last half of the 20th century, and especially in the first two decades of the 21st century, special forces have become even more important as conventional warfare is far less common. Dealing as we are with communist oppression and subversion, small numbers of specially trained forces are able to inflict damage far out of proportion with their modest numbers. By operating behind enemy lines, to gather intelligence, to train and support resistance movements, and to mobilize irregular warfare, asymmetrical warfare, some call it. The goal of such special forces is to subvert and undermine the enemy, especially by mobilizing populations under their nominal control to active and effective resistance. In Vietnam, the American Green Berets trained, mobilized, and supplied the Montagnards, who continued to resist communism in Vietnam for many decades after the Americans had left their shores. In Mozambique, the Rhodesian SAS Sea Squadron trained and supplied RENAMO anti-communist guerrillas, who continue to resist the communists in Mozambique to this very day, 40 years since the official end of Rhodesia. In Angola, the South African Reconnaissance Commander and 3-2 Battalion aided, trained, supported, and supplied UNITA anti-communist freedom fighters of Jonas Savimbi combating communist Angolan and Cuban forces. UNITA has continued to resist communism for decades since the South Africans withdrew from their territory and ended that war 30 years ago. Missions also need special forces, spiritual special forces, who will work in areas where conventional missions are either illegal or dangerous. Through literature, leadership training, supplies and support, a small number of highly motivated, specialized missionaries can make an impact, far out of proportion with their modest numbers. This picture is of the largest shipment of Bibles ever smuggled into an Islamic country to that date. This now is 1998. Second World War vintage DC-3, what the Americans call a C-47. We call it DC-3. That would have been the kind of plane they were using at Arnhem in the Bridge Too Far. And that Land Rover We drove up from the Transvaal all the way to Stand to provide an ambulance, converted to an ambulance. 9,700 Bibles and New Testaments in 7 different languages, and we're landing on an airstrip for the first time. This airstrip had been in the hands of the Islamic jihadists just a few months before, I think 6 weeks before. And almost all of these materials were distributed in newly liberated territories. By the way, this record was unbeaten for many years until Hunter and John and Ben and Daniel took in a colossal 100-something thousand Bible shipment into the Nuba Mountains, breaking my record by far. For example, in Sudan, Frontline Fellowship trained the first chaplains for the Sudanese People's Liberation Army, the SPLA. We trained the first 70 chaplains of the SPLA. We trained the first 50 medics for the medical corps of the SPLA. We brought in supplies, tons of Bibles and medicines, container shipments of medicines, tons of medicines, and an ambulance, and brought in specialized medical staff to further train up medics and rehabilitate hospitals and clinics. Bring in, for example, Samaritan's Purse and others. While internationally, we published The Plight of the Persecuted, I personally took part in over 1,000 radio and TV programs in the United States alone, hundreds more in Europe and throughout Africa on behalf of the independence of South Sudan. Exposing the atrocities of National Islamic Front dictatorship of Omar al-Bashir and Khartoum. So successfully that South Sudan is now independent and Omar al-Bashir has been overthrown and is on trial for his crimes and soon to be sent to the Hague International Court of Justice for trial. We energetically campaigned for the independence of South Sudan. Here I'm standing next to General Salva Kiir, who Commander Salva Kiir is now President Salva Kiir of South Sudan, the first president of an independent South Sudan. On that occasion, 2001, he was arguing strenuously with me that the best they could hope for was autonomy. Independence was absolutely impossible because no one had redrawn the map since the Berlin Conference of 1884 in Africa. And I argued with him that you will always be a persecuted minority unless you can redraw the map where black Christians are the majority, which you are in South Sudan. If you want to stay in a united federal Sudan, you will always be a persecuted minority unless you redraw the map. You need South Sudan to be independent. He said it'll never happen. And yet, 10 years later, he was sworn in as first president of South Sudan. This campaign was ultimately successful and resulted on the 9th of June, 2011, with the independence of South Sudan, which was a monumental answer to a lot of prayer and sacrifice. Psychological warfare can particularly be divided into PSYOP's own forces and PSYWAR enemy forces. The goal of PSYOP's own forces is to build up the morale of your own forces, to encourage, to educate, to empower, to energize, to enlist and to enthuse your own forces, to inform, to inspire, to involve, to motivate and mobilize by examples of excellence, to fight, to innovate, to persevere, to victory. And by the way, this year, February, we'll be marking 30 years of Africa Christian Action. PSYWAR enemy forces aims to undermine the morale of the enemy by exposing their atrocities, their weaknesses, their failures, their evils, their hypocrisies, and their crimes. By utilizing eyewitness testimonies and historic perspectives, photographic evidence and video footage, reports and broadcasts, and publications such as the classic 1984, An Animal Farm by George Orwell, or the writings of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who spent years in the Soviet Gulag. Here's one of his books, We Never Make Mistakes, inverted commas, what the Communist Party claimed. The party never is wrong. It's the infallible, you see. They are God. The Black Book of Communism. What makes this 900-page doorstopper so important is all 6 authors are ex-communists. The editor, Stéphane Portier, was the editor of Communisme magazine in France. They all got converted against communism because when the files were opened in the Kremlin after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, they discovered from the Soviet Union's own records over 100 million people murdered, under the Warsaw Pact in the Soviet Union and communist Soviet-controlled territories, according to their own files, according to their own records, murdered, including the Katyn Forest Massacre and all the rest. Agenda 2, Masters of Deceit, excellent two-hour film, highly recommended, exposing the agenda of the communists and how they infiltrate education, entertainment, news media, and all the rest so effectively. And through other resources that we have written and published and digitized and made available to oppose and expose the communist forces arrayed against us. These are great weapons. Here's one. General Heldnes put out a booklet on how the Soviets and Cubans lost the war. He said, are there any of my old soldiers who have the ability to get this published? And so we took up the challenge. We got it published and made available as a free digital ebook as well as printing it. This is a great book too. Christian Terror, classic. 1976, published by Father Arthur Lewis. Father Arthur Lewis was an Anglican Church of England missionary to Rhodesia. He's the one who blew the whistle on the World Council of Churches funding terrorists who are murdering missionaries, ministers, and Christians, burning churches down over the congregations, and pointing out the World Council of Churches funding this. That led to the Baptists and the Salvation Army pulling out of the World Council of Churches in protest. Even Reader's Digest published his book in sections. That's in the 1970s. Well, because a lot of people have forgotten all that, we've republished Christian Terror by Father Arthur Lewis. He is the first board member of Frontline Fellowship. And there's a whole lot of others. Soweto But God, phenomenal book, written on the Soweto Uprising, 1976, written by missionaries who were in Soweto, in the Dorothea Mission, embedded in the community. And what they documented, 1976, 16 June, which is celebrated as Youth Day, was an anti-Christian, occultic, satanic revolution. When children killed their parents and grandparents, when missionaries and ministers were targeted, when churches were burned, and how it has been falsely portrayed. These people have no axe to grind. They have no political bone in their body. These people are just missionaries, church planters. And I thought their story needs to be more widely known. So we've made it available as an ebook, Soweto But God, with their permission, of course. One of the greatest acts of resistance one can do to the New World Order, to the totalitarian, secular, humanist, revolutionary New World Order is to promote home education. To really resist the New World Order, be a straight, married mother or father, raising the next generation in a God-centered home with home education. This will drive the commies crazy. There is nothing we can do that is greater resistance than being straight and Protestant and Christian and home educators and resisting the New World Order, tuning out, switching off. Doesn't matter what the propaganda is on the news media. Switching off from the defiling so-called entertainment industry. Going for Christian alternatives. That's how we beat the revolution. Groups like Answers in Genesis of Ken Ham are dedicated to providing excellent resources to empower and equip parents to home educate their children with Bible-based, Christ-centered curriculum that undermines the New World Order and helps build, strengthen, and extend the kingdom of God on earth. I noticed that today, Answers in Genesis is the largest apologetics group on earth. Before the lockdown, they had 700 full-time staff. I don't know how many they had now. They've got the Creation Museum, and they've got the Ark Encounter, and they have got a vast library of resources that they've provided. Their website's spectacularly good. Our Reformation Society, this year, we're celebrating 15 years of every Thursday night meeting at Livingston House, dedicated to providing excellent resources to empower and equip parents to home educate their children from a Bible-based, Christ-centered curriculum that undermines the New World Order and helps to build and strengthen and extend the kingdom of God on earth. We launched Christian Liberty Books 25 years ago to provide resources for home education, and we have 6,000 titles, if you count the audiovisuals, importing from around the world and also providing a lot of our own materials too. To this end, we also launched something like 16 years ago, William Carey Bible Institute to provide a treasure trove of resources and books and manuals and audio and video resources and PowerPoints, 27 different subjects, totally free. The goal was to empower and equip students to bypass state indoctrination gulags and invest in the future of their families and faith with completely free resources, which initially we were planning for the persecuted church in remote resistance access areas. But this year we decided, because of the lockdown, it's making it available to anyone, anywhere. Because we're all behind enemy lines now. Some examples of a successful psyops against revolutionaries include our Women's Day outreaches, our missions in the mall, our protests outside these adultery centres, our Biblical Worldview Summits, we're part of counter-revolution right here, and Biblical Worldview Summits are proactive. Women's Day outreaches, getting into the malls, protest to Parliament against human trafficking. Outside these, this is one of the biggest brothels in Cape Town involved in human trafficking mavericks. It's right opposite the central police station. Make a stand against human trafficking, which, by the way, we had cabinet ministers and members of parliament pushing for the legalization of prostitution and human trafficking in 2010 in preparation for the World Cup soccer. And it was only a lot of hard work by ACA and others like Doctors for Life that prevented that. Our life change, our psyops, build up the morale of your own side, break down the morale of the other side. Having high visibility, high impact, posters, banners, March for Life, marching to Parliament, these big banners, all these are part of psyops. It's using visual representation. It's, in the enemy's term, propaganda, but this is positive propaganda in the sense that we are promoting truth, we're not promoting lies, but this banner so triggered President Thabo Mbeki in 1999 that we know he saw it. It was in opening of Parliament Day. He went straight past us going in at the Roland Street entrance to Parliament. And this banner we had: "This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I've set before you life and death, blessing and curses. Choose life so that you and your children may live." Deuteronomy 30. Well, within minutes of Thabo Mbeki driving in, we know he saw it, because out came a riot squad of police in full battle gear, confiscated the banner and took it inside and burned it. So talk about triggered. We thought there must be something good about this. So we put this verse on hundreds of t-shirts and we made the most of that. In fact, I need an artist to redo this banner, because this obviously struck a chord. You know, when you hit a chord, you know that, and you get flack, you know you're over target. We have been outside Parliament on the 1st of February every year since Nelson Mandela legalized abortion, 1997. And we have prayed at the gates of Parliament. And this is biblical. The Bible says that when innocent blood is shed, a curse comes on land. And the elders of the city must gather at the gates of the city where the decisions are made. And make clear, if they can't bring the culprit to justice, they must make clear that they do not associate with it and that they had nothing to do with this, that our hands are innocent of this blood. Otherwise, we share the guilt of innocent blood. And so, at the very least, we need to do this public demonstration to say, we do not agree, we do not consent, they do not represent us. Remember, when Abraham was interceding for Sodom and Gomorrah, God said, if there's just 10 righteous in the city, I'll spare the city. And so we need to do this. And we go regularly to Parliament, to the gates of Parliament, to protest. What we call a National Day of Repentance, on the day that our national sin of abortion was legalized. Sometimes we go to the High Court in Cape Town, and remind them that in God's court, abortion is murder. Go to University of Cape Town, Jamison Steps, Life Chains. You can view the Life Chain video 2020 on our ChristianAction.org.za website. And promote Sanctity Life Sunday, the last Sunday of this coming month, encouraging pastors to preach on the right to life of preborn babies. But how many churches are even meeting now? Maybe they can at least Zoom it, but we can at least use our social media to speak up for the persecuted. And we plan to march to Parliament, God willing, Monday the 1st of February. We always start at 12:30, just by Hanover Street, the old Kaiser Kruk Street, past the castle, past City Hall, up Adderley Street, up to Parliament, and we have a prayer vigil there. And if people can't join us for the march, they can join us at Parliament at the gates at 1 o'clock. Just another example of how Sidewalk can work. I think it was 1992 or 93, and F.W. de Klerk was president, Volksfreier, F.W. de Klerk, and he was allowing all kinds of envelopes to be pushed. And the blasphemous Last Temptation of Christ was banned in South Africa. Praise God for that. But Wits University got an academic exclusion permission from the Publications Control Board for a single screening on a certain night at Wits University in an academic setting of The Last Temptation of Christ, on condition that there was a debate on the merits and demerits with at least one minister, which had to be a theologically trained, ordained man, on the other side who opposed the film. Now, I got this information from our sources. Would you believe it, I next get a phone call from Wits University? Would I be interested in being part of a debate against blasphemy? They don't tell me about the Last Temptation of Christ film, the ruling, or the fact that they planned to show the film, but I immediately know the connection. Of course, I accept. So I made a phone call to my friend Fano Sabisi at KwaZulu-Natal Mission. I said, Fano, I need reinforcements. And told him what's going on. He bussed up a bunch of people from KSB and got Transvaal Christian Action together. And it was in this theatre that we had the debate. Now, I've got very few pictures of the evening, but I was on the stage and we were debating. And so the unbelievable perversion of the minds of these creeps boggles the mind. The Dominee, who was on the other side, and the chairman, who was totally on his side, the Dominee was running Kreis and Chronique, a regular so-called Christian program on SATV, which was as apostate and antichrist as it could be. This character, this so-called Dominee, this false prophet, said that everything is made in the image of God, therefore everything is God. And the only blasphemy in the world is censorship, because censorship censors the image of God. I said, let me get this clear. You're saying censorship of pornography is blasphemy, but pornography, even blasphemous pornography, is the image of God. And he said, yes. That's exactly what he's saying. I represent blasphemy because I want to censor the image of God, because this art, this film, The Last Temptation of Christ, is part of the image of God. For warped, perverse, twisted, double-think, newspeak, hard to beat. Well, at the end of it, the appointed hour, whatever it was over, the man stood up and grinned and said, we will now screen The Last Temptation of Christ. At this, Fano Sabisi stood up and said, no, we will not permit this. And we were about a third of the audience there. And so he called on the Christians. We all went up onto the stage, blocked the screen, and sang hymns. They said, we'll call the Angry Youth of Soweto. I said, please call Angry Youth of Soweto. In toy-toyed a bunch of little weeds, little teenagers toy-toying in there. When they saw us, Zulus, English, and Afrikaners, standing with our arms folded, they just fled. Then they said, we're going to call the police. Said, please go ahead. We had a prayer time. It's me over there. We've got quite a few of our Transvaal Christian Action KSB friends there. And about midnight, the police arrived. I think some people can see some people they can recognize here. And at about midnight, the police came and very politely asked, would you please vacate the theater, which we certainly did. And on the steps of the theater in Wits University, we had a prayer meeting and sang hymns of praise to God, and the police joined us. And the policeman said to us, we were aware that the permit expired at midnight, so we made sure we only arrived at midnight. Now, that's back when you still had some nice people working in officialdom. So, Tias Fano, a good friend, leading in prayer after that with the police cheerfully joining us in on that. That's just one of our Sidewalk operations, which messed up the plans of Wits. Because we had good intelligence, we understood what the theme was, and our people rallied. You know, the trumpet, Nehemiah's trumpet, rallied that part of the wall under attack, and we frustrated them no end. There's other examples, like when they tried to have a Jesus Christ Superstar play at Nico Milan in Cape Town, and we were there too. Our marches to Parliament against the secular states marched 30,000 people to Parliament in July. In May 1995, and That's the first time I met Ramaphosa. I don't have a picture of Ramaphosa there. I wasn't taking the pictures there. But Ramaphosa, first time I met him. So he was the chairman for the Constitutional Assembly, writing new constitution, along with Rolf Meyer, the Volksverein National Party side. And as Ramaphosa came up to receive the memorandum, he was pouring with sweat, his eyes were wide, he looked bloodshot, he looked terrified, actually. And we were told by Kenneth Meshew that inside, the whole of the ANC were terrified. They thought their last days had come, they were going to be torn apart or hung from the nearest lamppost, because this is the biggest demonstration that ever been seen in Cape Town. Of course, they're lucky that we as Christians don't behave like they would behave if they had that kind of group, but still. So Ramaphosa comes out and he sees Fanus Sibisi standing next to me and he says, "Brother, can I borrow your Bible?" Doesn't wait for a reply, snatches the leather-bound Bible, which has got embroidered on the cover, Reverend Fanus Sibisi. Just bought by my father-in-law, Bill Bathman, in Phoenix, Arizona, engraved there. And Fano had this Bible with him. So Ramaphosa goes up onto the Bucky platform, which we were using as a platform of the PA system to address the crowd. And Sil Ramaphosa lifts up the Bible and says, "I am also a Christian. Look, I bring my Bible with me to Parliament every day." Now, I was so close, I could have taken a picture. If I had a camera, I could have taken a picture and could have seen him holding a Bible that said Rev. Fano Sibisi on it. And Fano and I just looked at one another. The slickness of this man. And he had the people cheering and applauding and eating out of his hands. I mean, he's a very slick customer, a very clever politician. But he knew that we knew he was lying. But it didn't matter because most of the people out there wouldn't have known. That was our first encounter with Sil Ramaphosa. Well, we marched in 10,000 people in 1996 to Parliament opposing the attempts to legalize abortion, pornography, homosexuality, and all these other evils. And we've called our government to have a grondwet op godswet, constitution based upon God's law, back to the Bible. This is the occasion where this man came from the president's office. He summoned me to meet Nelson Mandela just 2 days later. Salt and Light, our radio program, we've been going for more than 25 years now. Sean and I started it off back in August 1995. We were the first Engelsgesprekende program on Radio Tigerberg for years. Still the longest running Christian program on Christian community radios in this country. Radio Tigerberg. Through our literature, through our campaign for the independence of the Cape of Good Hope, we've got a free handbook for Cape Independence available as an ebook, free PDF download on our web. Got the video, Case for Cape Independence. Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? Smash cultural Marxism. FrontlineMissionSA.org has a treasure trove of material of examples of resistance to communism and to revolution and resources you can use. Audio, video, there's an audio and video gallery you can access, articles galore, books, wide range of materials. Our newsletters can be downloaded or read as PDFs online. Gospel Defense League has a range of articles and materials available on the table back there. You can access quite a few of our videos. We work in a range of countries right now. We're receiving reports from our team in Sudan at this moment, not in South Sudan, in the north of Sudan, involved at this moment, and we're hearing very encouraging reports of what's going on there at the moment. These are resources to help in fighting revolution today. We've been on the front line for a long time, and it's time for the younger generation to know what communism is and where the revolution leads, and how we can beat them, and how revolutions always fail. And they always fail to deliver what they promise. And they always promise paradise and they deliver perdition. They promise heaven, they deliver hell. We must fight revolution. Christians must not get co-opted to help the revolution. We need to resist the revolution. Any questions, comments, complaints or criticisms? In the Misa. The Last Temptation of Christ. It was either 92 or 93. I'm suspecting it was 1993. But it's either 92 or 93 that happened. I'm slightly fuzzy on that one. It was a bewildering whirl those years. Yes. I'm sorry, say that again. Yes. That was from 1982 to 1989. And so they launched it early in 1982. And already in 1989, we start to see the first of the dominoes falling. Starting with, I think, Hungary and Poland were early, and then the Berlin Wall, and then Czechoslovakia. And the most spectacular was when Romania went up in the Christmas Revolution. So it was staggering. And think of the significance. 1989, 200 years after the French Revolution. 1789. There's so many amazing things in history, but that was one of the most incredible years of my life. 1989. I mean, it was, wow, could relive that year again. What a year. And honestly, the most exciting, thrilling, rejoicing celebrations in my lifetime. When the Berlin Wall came down, the Iron Curtain came down, and the countries of Eastern Europe were opened up for the gospel. Staggering. And we knew them before, we knew them afterwards and during it. And so to me, it's such a pity. I don't know of one Hollywood film that's ever been made about that. Because why would they? It wasn't one of their victories. You know, they lost. And so amazing how so much of the most important parts of history they've never had a film on it. So this is a challenge also young people who might have a calling to make films. We need films made, both documentaries and dramas, on these great events that I've spoken about, the great resistance against communism and the great victories. That's a challenge. Future generations should learn these things and know of these stories that I've just outlined very briefly here tonight. Yes? In the Soviet Union, yes, 15 republics. No. You would think that the Western countries would be trying to help, but they were not. They were very much trying to keep things together for the Soviets. The people of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia won their independence on their own, as did Croatia and Slovenia. There was no help from NATO. There was no help from the United States. The only ones who got any help from the United States wasn't for independence, but for resistance. America supported Solidarity to be able to mobilize, you know, that gave smuggling printing presses to help them with pamphlets and materials like that. But that was just for resistance. They didn't expect them to get independence. And similarly, America helped the Mujahideen fighting the Afghans, helping Soviets there, giving them Stinger missiles, shoot down Soviet helicopters, and helped Nicaragua. But that was Reagan helping fight the communists in the overseas colonies. They weren't working to get independence for Ukraine or Latvia or Lithuania. Those were done by the people themselves without international aid.
But then how did they not block it? Because normally when the communists
are
like superpowers
like that,
they fight to keep it down.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, how did they not manage? 1980s were a catastrophe for the communists. Absolute catastrophe. They lost not just face and morale, but they lost ground. And in the end, they lost power. And the thing is, first of all, you can see it as a miracle, an answer to prayer, a work of God's grace. There was revival in much of Eastern Europe, like Romania had real revival. And there was a lot of spiritual work. But when you put culminatively the work of the Bible smugglers and the Christian radio programs and the local churches and the prayer movements and the resistance on the ground, there was so much that was building up, and then there was the real resistance. Now you've got today some people from the Soviet side, Russian veterans who fought in Angola, have published books like Angola, The Beginning of the End of the Soviet Union. And Angola, we never saw it, not even Afghanistan. And other books like these, which Russians have written, saying the Soviet Union knew they couldn't win a nuclear war with NATO. But they thought they could win a conventional war. But when they couldn't even win a conventional war against South Africa, who was sanctioned and and isolated. Their morale was shattered. And they began to doubt whether they could even win a war against NATO. And so they said that Angola was the high water mark of the Soviet Empire, and it was the beginning of the end. Now, of course, there's a lot of other things going in Mozambique and Afghanistan and Poland and all over. But Angola has been identified by several Russian military leaders, colonels and others, who've written books on us saying the psychological shock to the Soviet Union of losing in Angola. It said Angola was our Vietnam. And the morale breakdown was that the Russians stopped believing in their own system. And in the end, because there was an absolute catastrophic collapse of faith in communism, and as one country fell or was freed, off the other, encouraged others and others and others, and they broke away. And, you know, the Baltic states, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia had been resisting with a singing revolution because they had no other weapons at that time. So they sang of their history and their heritage and their faith. And so it was a protest. Bill Bethman writes in his book, Going Through, of how when the communists came and closed this church in Riga, in Latvia, where Daniel is sung in Riga, they closed this church in Riga so that Christians would gather outside the church, because church is now barred and bolted by order of the state. And they did their worship service singing in the streets and blocking the road, and the intersection overflowed. And after a while, the Russians rushed back, unlocked the church, and let them come back in just to get them off the streets. You know, that kind of protest. So it was brilliant, but to have lived through it, you just saw the resistance. The people were adamant. So some of the, to give you an example of the kind of resistance, they had this cosmonaut who'd flown, gone to outer space, came back, Yuri Gagarin? Gagarin, that's it. So he comes back and he's sent on a propaganda tour around Soviet schools. I've been into the heavens and I can tell you there is no God. And there were times when students would say things like, but comrade, the Bible says only the pure in heart will see God. And there's another example of how in the Soviet Union they had an atheist coming giving his lecture to the commissar, all a proof against God. And at the end, man challenges the school. He says, is there anyone who can say anything to refute the truth of atheism? And somebody shouted out in Russian, Christ is risen. And the entire school resounded with, he is risen indeed. You can imagine this poor commissar. I mean, that's the point. They couldn't bludgeon the faith of the people out of them. Today, 80% of the people of Russia claim to be Orthodox Christians in good standing with the church, baptized members of the Orthodox Church, and there's lots of other denominations in Russia too. Atheism's really suffered a crippling defeat in Russia. So, other comments? Yes. I think there's a good place for private Christian schools, and certainly for some people that is logistically the best option for them. My problem with a lot of private Christian schools is they still use the state curriculum, secular humanist textbooks. So if you're going to have a private Christian school, it must have Christian teachers, not just brainwashed teachers who went through the secular humanist indoctrination gulags, and now they have Christian hearts but humanist minds, and they've got a secular humanist textbook, and they sing Shine, Jesus, Shine in assembly, and the rest of the time they teach them evolution and situation ethics. I mean, that's not a good Christian school. And a lot of Christian schools are that. But if it's a genuine Christian school with a genuine Christian curriculum and teachers who are thoroughly discipled in Christ and on fire for Christ, then a private Christian school can be great. I think for some people, that kind of schooling is preferable. I think home education is the best, but there's a good place for independent Christian schools, for sure. And we've started a whole lot. I helped start about 100 in Sudan, made sure they had Christian textbooks, and I trained the teachers too. I trained 780 teachers in Sudan for that, specifically in biblical worldview and repeat the all good materials. So to me, there is a place for Christian schools. But in my experience, most private independent Christian schools in this country are not that independent. And they're not that Christian. One example being so-called independent Christian school that we've got in Pinelands, where they still use state curriculum and they expect the students to write a eulogy to Nelson Mandela on his birthday. And I went to the principal and I said, can you think of any country, I mean free countries, like the North Korea and China, where students could be required to write a positive tribute to a political leader? She said, well, I can't think of them. I was thinking about South Africa. And I said, I believe Margaret Thatcher is the finest prime minister in British history, but I don't think it would be reasonable to expect every child in Britain to write a tribute to her. Same thing about Ronald Reagan in America, same thing about Ian Smith in Rhodesia. I don't think it's reasonable to expect everybody to, on any political figure, there's going to be different views. Because I asked, can one not write an objective article on this person's life? No, it has to be a positive tribute. So this is brainwashing. This is indoctrination. What does God do? Are you an independent school? Yes, we are. Do you get any money from the government? No, we don't. In fact, the government requires a lot of money from us to get registered and to get inspectors here. So why do you do this? The principal couldn't tell me. That's the kind of independent Christian schools we've got in this country. Brainwashed beyond comprehension. They've got on their list visiting the Apartheid Museum, the Holocaust Museum and all that stuff. When are you going to the castle? Not on our curriculum. When are you going to Huguenot Monument in Frankfurt to the Huguenot Museum? Not on our curriculum. And so on and so forth. How independent are these Christian schools? Bunch of indoctrination gulags run by Christian hearts with humanist minds. So I'm all for Christian schools, but then it's got to be Christian. Yes?
I just want to ask, I heard that the Russian speakers are using the Christian for the
old
Orthodox. What do you know about that?
Yeah, it's exaggerated. I mean, look, you look at a lot of the churches around us. There's a lot of our churches that are not that Christian, a lot of which are Celtic, a lot of which are false teaching. You just have to watch something like American Gospel or watch films like Call for Discernment, and you know the kind of garbage out there. Can you blame the Russians when they want to do something to protect themselves from these fly-by-night health and wealth, name it and claim it and frame it, prosperity cult preachers come into the country? And also, when they had to protect their people from children being adopted and shipped off to America to be adopted by some pedophiles and same-sex couples and junk like this. So Russia's brought in some logical laws to protect themselves from some highly skeptical, weird characters that we should want to protect ourselves from too. The Russians are Orthodox, and the Russian Orthodox Church is a state church, but I've got friends and associates who've worked throughout Russia and Ukraine, and they say they have no problem in evangelism, personal, so on. But they said, yes, some of these people coming in, the big money ones, want to hire a stadium and have the big things, and where it's a money-making racket, they'll find it hard. So basically, I think what they're trying to do is protect themselves from what they see as cults and exploitative groups. But evangelicals are free there. For example, the largest group of Baptists in the world are in America. Second largest group of Baptists in the world are in Russia. Third largest group of Baptists in the world are in Romania. The largest group of Bible-believing, born-again, evangelical Christians in Europe are in Russia. The second largest group of Bible-believing, evangelical, born-again Christians in Europe are in Ukraine. The third largest are in Romania. So this idea that Russia's persecuting Christians, they bring in legislation against certain groups that they perceive as cults, quite a few of which we would probably agree are also cults. And they've got their churches, and they've got a lot of Protestant churches there too, who don't have a problem operating. So I think there's been a lot of exaggeration. Bear in mind that Russia has a policy against homosexuality, and it's a crime to propagandize a minor with homosexual teaching. And we've got denominations, or should I say abominations in the West, that have homosexual priests, homosexual marriages, and all of that. Can you blame Russia for wanting to protect themselves from that sort of thing?